Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. With me is Chris Buchanani. Chris, the long, hard off season is finally over. We get to talk about actual football. We get Saturday, 3:30, Penn State, Marshall. I am really excited about this. How about you? What's your level of excitement?
Oh, through the roof, Jim. I'm always excited for a new Penn State football season. I really try to remind myself to never take for granted, number one, that I actually get to live here in Happy Valley, and it's a wonderful place to be 365 days a year. But football season is really how I fell in love with it first and will always be closest to my heart. So to just be here, to be a home base for all of our friends from college who want to come in and experience Penn State football weekend and to go and tailgate before the game, and fortunate enough to be able to be a season ticket holder and be inside Beaver Stadium. Super fortunate, by the way, to have avoided the executioner's axe on my ticket prices going up too much. So that was all great. So yeah, super grateful, very excited for the Matt Campbell era. And it's a nice bonus to have that 3:30 kick to start the season. You like that extra tailgate time at the beginning of the year.
Oh man, it is perfect. The weather, as we're recording this, the weather is supposed to be really good. Love that. Love September tailgating. You know, there are folks who talk about that brisk fall. I don't need brisk. I really don't, Chris. I'll take September weather. Labor Day weekend, I'm okay with it. Also, kicking off the holiday weekend with a lengthy tailgate, I'm good.
The good news for you, Jim, is that apparently this super El Nino is going to minimize the brisk and extend the September-style weather. So it could be good news for you up to and beyond that USC whiteout tailgate. So that's good news.
I will take it. And you know what? If it's a little bit warm for the tailgate and I have to go to a cold beverage to help me out, Chris, I'm good with that.
No question. You also mentioned this being the opening weekend and Labor Day weekend. One reason why I think it feels like this offseason was interminably long, obviously there were some unique factors for us at Penn State, but I think for everyone, just having Labor Day on September 7th for me feels like crazy late. I guess it's pretty much the latest it could possibly be. But I do love this Labor Day college football weekend, because before the NFL comes in and bullies college out of some of those time slots, the chance to have games on a Thursday night and then go into Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and even a Monday night game, I always love that. I love that Labor Day college football weekend. And we get beyond Saturday. There are some cool, fun matchups on Sunday and Monday. So I'm looking forward to all of them.
I am also. Let's get back to Penn State's weekend with Marshall. And I give credit at the Matt Campbell's press conference. Someone asked him about his emotions and feelings and what they are going to be like for him coming onto the field. And now a shameless plug. You, myself, and Mike Villagrana talked about this a little bit on our podcast. That's go to the HVU Insider YouTube page. You'll get to see it. But, Chris, I think we sometimes forget that this group, Matt Campbell and staff, much of them coming from Iowa State, this is kind of new for them. Going out onto a field with over 100,000 people there. And if you hear Matt Campbell talk, you hear Taylor Mauser talk, they, I believe, are still a little bit in awe of where they're at. They appreciate the fact that, oh my goodness, we're taking a step up here. Oh, look at this. We're at Penn State, and I think they are going to walk into that stadium not taking it for granted how much that means for them.
And I love that on a certain level. Truly, I am grateful for their awe, because I do think, number one, you're set up for the most success at a place like Penn State, if you understand and appreciate what it means to be in the rarefied air of coaching at a program like this, and you know, I also just as a fan and as a resident of the Nittany Valley and a Penn State alum, I appreciate feeling like my coaching staff is happy to be here. That said, and I brought this up on the obligatory podcast, that awe should last for about, I don't know, 30 to 90 seconds. And then they need to let it go. You guys, you belong here. You are now the coaching staff at Penn State. This is your program. And you didn't win a contest or a raffle to come coach here for a day. You earned the opportunity to hold these positions and do this job. And once you get it all out of your system, you scan the panorama of the stadium from the box, or you look up at the awe-inspiring sight of that crowd as you come out the tunnel, let it sink in. That's great. And then it's got to be down to business.
Exactly. And I'm with you. I like the fact that they appreciate the fact that they're here. They're not taking it for granted. They're not assuming anything. They're not assuming, well, I'll be here a year or two and then make my mark in the NFL or move on, something like that. They appreciate the fact that they're here. But yeah, they've got to get down to business once the whistle blows.
And there's a fine line to be drawn, just to touch on this quickly, between recognizing that Penn State is among the haves in the sport, there's no question, and the majority of programs are looking up at us, but we're still looking up at several other schools that we want to consider our peers, and some of that involves investment in facilities and amenities and all the things that we have to offer to our team. So I don't want to take away from the fact that James Franklin did a lot of good during his coaching tenure, sometimes kind of having to be the bad guy and complain about stuff that other programs we're chasing have that we did not, and to get us more caught up there. But I think sometimes he took it a little overboard. The gimme Jimmy stuff kind of got old after a while. And so I do appreciate that this is a staff, because of where they have come from and how they came up in the profession, who's going to get here and see not like a few flaws and defects, but in fact, an embarrassment of riches that they can, you know, compared to what they had, where they had great success at Iowa State, they could not be better set up to be successful here. And I think that appreciation will probably help them do their jobs better.
And it leads to kind of a theme of the off season, which has been, okay, compared to where they were, Big 12, they're now Big 10, they're no longer Iowa State, it's now Penn State, and the standards are different. But the overriding question or concern I think Penn State fans have is, wait a minute, can we settle for the three-star overachievers that at Iowa State meant you were doing a great job? Three-star overachievers isn't necessarily how you're going to beat Ohio State and Oregon and Indiana, though.
It's not. And unless you really want to, Jim, as we're about to start the season opener weekend, I don't know if I really want to relitigate the whole stars and talent evaluation debate. But one thing I have been consistently talking about with Penn State's program for the last decade is, if you look at the recruits that we were able to bring in as the program's success built coming off the 2016 Big Ten championship season, we were very fortunate to bring in some elite level athletes, you know, some Micah Parsons style recruits. We also swung and missed on a lot of elite five-star prospects, some of whom went on to work out, many who did not. But when I look at that team that helped Franklin and Penn State turn the corner, that 2016 squad, they were built around the qualities and the leadership and the football ability of the guys you just described. The undervalued three-star athletes, guys like Grant Haley and Marcus Allen and Jason Kabinda and Trace McSorley, who, you know, were guys who you know, maybe just as I said, maybe had one or two defects that put them a little farther to the periphery of the programs that we want to be like and that are having the most success in the sport. And I think historically, Penn State has always built even its best teams around a combination of a few stars and then a lot of those Johnny Lunchpail guys. So I don't look too far down the road and clutch my pearls over what's the recruiting class going to look like in 2029. I think we've got a track record with this staff that they can identify talent and develop it. And I think that's going to be the name of the game in modern college football.
Well, let's get to this team because I do think there's a lot of talent here. Names that people don't know yet. And I don't think the national media knows yet. I just went through an article, 100 most important or 100 best players in college football. And there was not a Penn State player to be seen.
Not a single one, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think you and I could take a look at and name maybe four or five players that we could say, you know what? By the end of the year, I suspect they will be on that list. So that it did surprise me, but I think a lot of it is people just don't quite know who they are. Now, with the game coming up, a lot of press appearances for Matt Campbell and his staff, some announcements made about the offensive line. Matt Campbell came out and said, here's our starting five, which I think we all kind of knew for quite a while. That redshirt freshman Malachi Goodman is going to be your starting left tackle. Trevor Burr, Brock Riker, Cooper Cousins, and Anthony Donka from left to right. I know we've talked about this before. You have some concerns about the depth in the middle of that group, but overall, pretty solid group.
That's a Big Ten caliber starting offensive line. There's no doubt about it. I don't worry about the couple of position battles that we did hear about in camp. Garrett Sexton pushing Malachi Goodman, Dom Rooley, who did end up missing time in the fall, so probably made the decision to go with Riker all that much easier. But to me, that's just indicative that you do have some depth. And I like the fact that those guys had to earn the spots that a lot of people assumed were going to be theirs in Goodman and Riker.
And the feeling is that, hey, these guys earned their spot in camp. Okay. When we come back, we're going to look at a few more things that the staff had to say. And we'll also take a look at this first game with Marshall right after this.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter two. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We had the Matt Campbell and staff meeting the media quite a bit this past week, but I want to take a quick look at Marshall, who is the opponent for this game. Penn State, a big favorite, of course. I get leery of those big spreads and counting on them for the first game, especially. You know, you could get ambushed by somebody, especially at Marshall, the coach there for a second year. Oftentimes, this is the leap that they make. And what scares me a bit, too, with Marshall, is a returning quarterback, and he's a dual threat guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Carlos Del Rio Wilson, a transfer from Syracuse. Shout out to my obligatory co-host, Kevin Horn, who had the great stat that as a backup at Syracuse, he had more completions to Traber Pena than Drew Aller did before he got injured as a starting quarterback through five games. Just a reminder of how painful our immediate past here is in Happy Valley. Yeah, I agree with you about the big numbers, Jim. You look back to week zero, and the two big numbers that stood out to you were, I think, around 35 for that USC-San Diego State game, and then about 25 for Florida State, New Mexico State. Neither one of them hit. And in the new era of college football, which I alluded to before we went to break, talking about the importance of player development, you are just not going to be able to carry the depth of superstar caliber athletes on your roster. So the difference between your starters and your backups, and especially the backups to the backups, is just not going to look anything like the college football we have been used to seeing. So I think the days of the 81-0 blowout against Cincinnati are far into the past. So yeah, I'm not a sports gambler, but if I were, I would not be a buyer on any of these big numbers anymore early on in the season. I just think you're going to see them adjusting down quickly.
I'm with you on this one too. As someone who does dabble a bit on wagering these games, I don't feel comfortable with this one from the Penn State side. Again, like I said, coach returning, quarterback returning, and as you mentioned, you don't have necessarily, you know, a situation where your fourth team could beat the starters on the opposing team. Some people think it goes the other way. Oh, if they have any good players, they end up moving on. Someone cherry picks them away. Not necessarily the case everywhere. And you can get ambushed in that first game. It's that mobile quarterback that always scares me. Now, Marshall apparently got some bad news, though, on the defensive side of the ball. Booger Trotter. And I tell you what, we're starting out with Carlos Del Rio Wilson and Booger Trotter.
But Boogie, by the way.
Boogie, you Booger,
got Boogie.
McFarlane,
yes. Boogie Cousins. We got Boogie Trotter.
Okay. First of all, just as an aside, if you were nicknamed Boogie by your buddies as a kid, and now you go to college, do you want to continue to be called Boogie?
Probably for me personally, that would not be something I would seek out, but to each his own.
Well, anyway, word is, now he's an excellent defensive back, and apparently he's no longer on the roster. I believe he was also one of those players who got a fifth year, was part of the issue. Don't know if that's the reason why he's not on the roster, but a late scratch like that for a team like Marshall, where, again, depth might be an issue at the Big Ten level, but it's probably even more of an issue at the Marshall level.
Sure. And just experienced playmaking ability, somebody who's played a lot of football and was integral to Marshall's team last year, led them defensively in both tackles and interceptions. And it just speaks, Jim, to the wacky environment we're inhabiting in this sport right now, where we have to qualify as we are recording. Reported, yes. Tyler Donahue, 24/7 Sports, as rock solid and reliable a source as you're going to get in the space, that indeed he has been removed from the roster. So it looks like the latest court ruling, because now we're all worried about what courts have to say and what some appellate judge, some backwater county, thinks about college football eligibility, that Boogie Trotter is indeed not going to be one of these fifth-year players who is eligible to play, so he's not going to be on the field on Beaver Stadium on Saturday. Would you, going back to sports gambling, Jim, put any amount of money on that holding up all the way to 3:30 in the p.m. on Saturday, September 5th? I know I wouldn't.
Oh, no. Nope. No way. You just don't know. And it's hard sometimes to determine Las Vegas seems to be able to do it. You know, we can reset the spread knowing that leading tackler and leading interception guy on the Marshall defense is no longer there. Will you see that spread bump up a couple points? As you and I mentioned earlier, we're thinking, you know what, those big spreads just aren't carrying so much anymore. And I think especially in a first game, when you've got an entirely new coaching staff, might there be a couple painful points for Penn State, you know, where someone doesn't line up where they're supposed to be on a third down and you end up not converting on a third and two. And, you know, that changes things in the game. I don't think, famous last words, not to jinx them, I don't think there's a threat for them to lose this game, but I think the easy blowout is not going to be the case either, Chris.
Yeah, that's my sense. And going back to the changing nature of the sport, I don't know that the majority of fans have adjusted their expectations to understand how the contours of these early non-conference matchups are changing. They're all still sort of expecting that, okay, you tick off two or three wins at the start of the year that all look like a cupcake blowout, you know, where we're hanging 77 points on Idaho or whatever it was back to start the 2019 season. I just don't think you're going to see as much of that. And this is not the sort of opponent against whom you would maybe expect those sort of results, but it's not a quote unquote top brand. I've thrown this stat out a lot. It's worth what it's worth. Marshall's 103 in the ESPN FPI ratings, and Penn State is 16. There should be, theoretically, a huge talent gap between these rosters.
And I think there is, but let's look now on the Penn State side. We did get some news this week. Some of the injured players, Jeremiah Cooper, important part of the defensive backfield. He had told us, you know, a month ago, his goal was to be able to play in the first game, might be the second. He's going to play. And they announced that Gabe Burkle and Alex Tash, they are going to be out for the first game, but the plan is they will probably be ready for the second game. How important is that news?
I think it's huge that they're still on schedule, and getting Cooper back is big. I've advised everybody on defense, watch for number four when he's out there. This could be a game-changing player, a guy with, I believe, 8 career interceptions. Yes. So someone with a nose for the ball, and also brings the sort of positional versatility that it seems like Danton Lynn really prizes in his defensive scheme. Because if you followed at all the news around what happened with Iowa State's season last year, they were ravaged by injuries in the defensive secondary. So Cooper, who is a natural safety, but sort of has the build and the athleticism that he can move around in the secondary, he had to play corner for them most of the year last year, and probably could also slide into the nickelback, Matt Campbell said in his press conference this week. So that's huge. But just as huge on an injury front to me is that most of the guys, I don't want to say all, because I'm sure there might be one exception floating around I'm forgetting, but for all intents and purposes, the majority of guys who got nicked up during fall camp appear to be full go for Saturday. So this is a healthy team. Huge when depth is a concern. And when you think about how banged up they were, Jim, in the spring, which may turn out to have been a blessing because it gave the staff a chance to evaluate some of the younger guys on the roster and build depth, like that to me is an A-plus headline. Penn State, very, very healthy heading into the opener.
It is. And I had somebody ask me about, you know, how is it Burkle and Tash, they're missing first game, going to be ready for the second game. 7 days difference. If a long off season, how can that be, you know, when it's that close? And my take on it, I know you're also a baseball fan like me. The talk always in baseball when a player's injured, whenever they are ready, give them one more day off. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like that's the way this is being handled. And it goes back to what Matt Campbell said, rather be slow and right than fast and wrong.
Well, and throw caliber of opponent out the window. Let's just forget that it should be one of the easier matchups on Penn State's schedule, which, though, in fact, it will be. Again, famous last words, but again, if you're worrying too much about the Marshall Thundering Herd, it might be a long autumn in the Nittany Valley. Really, Jim, for what Penn State needs out of its linebacker room in a 4-2-5 alignment, and certainly in the tight end group, is this something where you look at it and say, man, if they don't have Burkle and Tash ready to go by Saturday, it's a real problem? No, of course not. So why not be extra careful?
Exactly. That's exactly it. Real quick, in the last minute, Taylor Mauser also mentioned Alex Mansky is going to play, and he made it sound like not necessarily just mop-up duty. Mm-hmm. He's going to find a way to get Mansky some snaps.
I question a little bit whether that might be some gamesmanship on his part. We'll see. I'm not a huge fan of the gadget running quarterback deal. Now, I say that, and I guess I got to be prepared to see it again. But I think easing Rocco back into his first action in over a year where he's feeling healthy, you want to let that guy just get into a rhythm. But I've been very impressed with Alex Mansky from what we saw of him in camp. I do think and hope that we get to see him operate the offense for a not insignificant portion of Saturday's game. But, if we're going to do another Will Levis, Bo Prabula deal, I guess I just need to grin and bear it.
Yes, I'm anxious to see the kid out in the field just to after his story. That's it. Quarter two, quarter three. Yes, it's Ask Chris when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. Chris, you and I have talked about this. You're filling in for Very Big Shoes, Andy Shea, and nowhere is that more relevant than in quarter number three of our show, which used to be Ask Andy. We are now converting to Ask Chris. Are you ready for it, my friend?
I'm indeed feeling the pressure, Jim, but I'm just going to white knuckle my way through it. Let's go.
I have all the confidence in the world in you. Let's start with a homie, Matt from State College.
Nice.
He says, Chris, my bold prediction is that USC will lose at Rutgers and at Penn State, but beat Oregon and Ohio State at home. How plausible do you think this scenario is in our current world where conference alignments are essentially independent of geography?
Wow. That was for the Josh Pate fans out there, a 9.75 on the Chalice of Supremacy scale. Okay. Let me say this. Personally, I'm not buying that one, Jim. But let us not forget a Lincoln Riley-coached USC team coming east to play a very bad Maryland team and having a similar result to the one being predicted by Matt here. And we know there is, even with a relatively small sample size, a data set that is indicative of an appreciable impact on teams going west to east in this new goofy Big Ten alignment where we've got that West Coast pod out there. So when you look at the team USC has this year and what are their strengths, quarterback, as is always the case seemingly under Lincoln Riley, they seem to have improved almost across the board on offense and at least stabilized things. Defensively, I still don't think they're great. I do love Gary Patterson a lot as a coach. In fact, he was my pick to become Penn State's new defensive coordinator until Duke fired Manny Diaz a few years ago. So yeah. I think he's a great option to try to right the ship out there in Southern Cal. So I don't hate the idea that playing in the Coliseum in some big stakes games, they could go 2-0 in that homestand. I just cannot imagine a world where they come east and lose to Rutgers. So I love the boldness, but I'm not buying it.
I'll tell you where I think it's relevant. Yes, I think USC will struggle coming east. Rutgers, that's the kind of team a USC won't want to play. They make it a rock fight. I think USC survives that. Ohio State having to go cross country, but they're such a good team. I'm with you on that, Chris. All right, we're going to go to another Matt. This is Matt from Massachusetts. Guys, I have to get this out of my system. I'd like to say that pro football players returning to play college ball is absolutely disgusting and should get massively fined. It's a very long question, but he ends up with, can or could the best college team in general go up against an NFL team? Nope. I recall this question coming up. You know what? That's the right answer. But I'm going to add some context to this. I'll bet you you're not old enough to remember, Chris, when the college all-star team would play the defending NFL champions.
So I am aware that that happened, but I am not old enough to remember it.
Well, I am old enough to remember it. So I looked it up. It happened from 1934 to 1976. This took place. There were two ties, but out of the 40 games that came to a conclusion, how many games do you think the college all-stars won?
Zero.
They actually won 9 times.
Okay.
And I remember it was always interesting.
Back in like the leather helmet days?
Well, it started in 1934. It was a Chicago Midwest kind of charity thing. And back in those days, there apparently were additional ones of these. And if you could forgive me for digressing a little bit, I didn't think of this going into my research, but I bumped into something, one of my favorite stories, if you could indulge me. Years ago, 30 years ago or so, maybe 35 years ago, I'm playing softball in Philadelphia area. One of my buddies by the name of Bob Duray, he had his first child, and he named him Gus, of all things. And it's like, Gus? Even back then, that was not a common name to name a kid. Why did you do it? Well, I named him after my grandfather, who was Gus Duray. Do you know who Gus Duray is, Chris?
I do not.
In the early days of college football, around 1910 or so, Newt Rockne, before he was coach at Notre Dame, he was a player there. He was a wide receiver when the forward pass came into play. And guess who the quarterback of that team was?
Well, it's got to be Gus Duray.
It was Gus Duray, and he actually coached one of these early All-Star games, and he was the first coach to get a win with the college All-Stars. So that is my Gus Duray story. So I'm fascinated by it, if nobody else is, Chris.
Long story short, a modern college football national champion would get smoked by the Jets or the Browns.
Yes, and you know, Matt's point was, you know, it's a man versus boy kind of deal. And that's part of the issue. Also, injuries could happen. I think there's something to that, but especially if you were to get in the field with a full NFL team, his point is, you know, I'm not sure this handful of guys who might come back from the, you know, an NFL tryout, not be good enough to make it. I'm not sure how big an effect they would actually have on the college game, but I still don't like it. Matt uses the word he's disgusted by it, but I think he's right to have a negative feeling towards it.
I'm with him.
All right, let's go. Okay, this is a rite of passage for you, Chris, taking over the Ask Chris, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to take a question from Steve from Columbia,
okay,
who goes as off the wall as you possibly can.
We're talking, he says, Columbia, South Carolina?
No, Columbia, PA.
Oh, okay. All right.
So Steve from Columbia says, Chris, you clearly bleed blue and white. I like you. Attaboy. My question to Andy a couple years ago, would you have a pinky toe surgically removed if it got the Nittany Lions a national championship? Andy and Jim both said no. So are you a legit fan or just a poser? Come on, pinky toe or natty? What's your call?
You asked me this question offline, Jim, when it came up a few years ago. And I will preface this by saying that I'm a recreational runner. It's very important to me. It's a big part of my physical and mental health routine. And nevertheless, even though I am told you lose a pinky toe and you basically lose your balance, unequivocally, yes, of course I would give up the pinky toe. And in fact, I think it's unbelievably selfish of me to not. I mean, I could live without a pinky toe, and I would have to carry with me for the rest of my life the fact that I very selfishly had deprived all of my fellow Penn Staters a chance to share in enjoyment of a national championship, all because I was too attached to a toe. Ultimately, not going to really miss that much. So yeah, I gotcha. I know that deal's not possible, but if it's ever on the table and I feel that the terms and conditions have all been sorted through, I gotcha 100%. I would happily, proudly give up one or both of my pinky toes to get Penn State to hoist that trophy.
You know, Chris, you are now officially part of the Keystone Sports Network team. You took a question from Steve. You answered it in a positive way. You are part of the team. All right.
Keep them coming.
Okay. Again, another rite of passage here. Tim from Port Matilda.
Okay.
Jim and Chris, I love that he was your choice to replace the semi-retired Andrew P. Shea. I'm the long question guy. Just as a side, yeah, Tim gives us long questions. Chris, you'll get used to it. Anyway, I saw Landon's flag plant episode with Pate's producer, Jesse, describing either negative or positive truths about 26 PSU. What is your flag plant? Mine, and tell me if you agree, is Rocco Beck is Trace with a stronger arm. P.S., Quentin Martin is an NFL back and is being slept on way too much, even by Penn State fans.
Oh, wow. That's great, because I agree with both of those flag plants. I've been a Quentin Martin propagandist all offseason. And the similarities between Rocco and Trace are almost eerie, frankly, just in terms of their affect, their play style, their stature, everything. Okay, what do I want to make a flag plant on? My flag plant is this, Jim, that we are all wet in the bed about Penn State's pass rush and how it's going to be bad and we don't have any pass rushers on this team. I think we are going to – you talk about none of our guys show up on the top 100 college football players, complete slight to a guy like Tony Rojas, who's got the resume to deserve to be there. But there are a couple of tight ends who could be on there for sure. Darius Dixon comes to mind as somebody who could be on that list. We're going into this season with not a single guy in that edge rusher room, which I think is deceptively deep, being talked about by college football experts across the country or even our own fan base. I think we exit 2026 with, do I want to say at least? Sure, it's a beautiful sunny day. The thunderstorms have given way to a blue and white sky. At least one potential first-round draft pick in the edge rusher group.
Wow. You care to give us a name? Which one you think it'll be?
I think it's going to be a toss-up between Max Granville and Ivan Kamiju.
I'm with you on that. I think that's a really good call. We've got 30 seconds left. We're going to sneak in a quick one. Jason from Wayne, New Jersey. Rocco Beck versus Ethan Grunkmeyer. Who has the better season and why? And great to have you on the show.
Appreciated that. Thanks so much. Statistically, let me think about this. I think that Rocco is going to have the better season. I think he's got better protection, better weapons, And I think there are quite a few potential landmines on Virginia Tech's schedule this year. That said, I love Gronk and I wish him the best.
All right. That is it for your first Ask Chris segment. You passed with flying colors, Chris. We got one more quarter to go right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Chris Buchanani. And he just survived his first official Ask Chris segment with flying colors. Chris, it's time. I give you an A-plus on your answers.
I appreciate that, Jim. Thank you.
My question
is, I hope it's not like
is,
a University of Michigan A-plus on just a pass-fail.
Nope. You get the A-plus, but now here's my first question to you. You got to give a grade to our listeners with their questions.
Oh, I thought they were great, and I'm not just saying that to to kiss up. But of course, I probably would anyway. But no, I thought they were smart questions, and I like the context. I like the asides. I like the humor. You got a good audience, Jim.
They are. I said this between segments. They get the spirit of the show. They really do. I appreciate it. All right, let's get back to this coming weekend. Penn State, Marshall. We'll get your prediction as the show ends at the end of the segment. Couple other things came up. Taylor Mauser, every time I listen to him talk, I like the guy even more. Fun guy. You got a chance to interview him, which was great. He mentioned, we're going to see four running backs playing this weekend. And again, there's maybe that thought of cleanup duty, mop up at the end. He made it sound like we could be seeing all four taking significant snaps, or serious snaps, I should say.
Yeah, and I wasn't really surprised because I think people have kind of forgotten about Cam Wallace. And when you think back 2 years ago, Jim, he just had an awful injury in that closer-than-it-should-have-been game against Bowling Green early on in the 2024 season. But recall that he had kind of earned the right to be first back off the bench out of the group we had behind Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. The kid has some ability, and when you watch him now, he appears to have fully recovered from those knee injuries he suffered against Bowling Green. So I wasn't surprised that he earned his opportunity to get a chance. I mean, you go back to the show you did with Mike earlier in the week talking about UVA's offense and how they had five running backs
that
logged multiple carries. I think early on with a schedule like this, a challenge for Taylor Mauser, I think, is going to be attending to all the mouths he has to feed in that offense. And Matt Campbell has been forthright about earning your opportunities. I think this is the kind of slate where you want to find out, okay, who is going to go out there and earn the opportunities? So it doesn't surprise me at all. And I'm kind of rooting for Cam. I hope he finds a way to carve out a niche with this squad.
My problem is I'm rooting for all four of them. I think they're all the kind of guys you want to see getting the opportunity to play.
Yeah.
And I think this is a continuation of camp battles. Still earn it. But I think also the other part to this is at running back, boy, that's a position where it's easy to get nicked up.
Sure.
Forget the major injuries, even just nicked up out for a game or two. You want to know that you've got a third and fourth guy that you could turn to if that happened. So I was very impressed with that answer. I'm happy to hear that. What we also had Taylor Mauser talk about was the wide receivers. He was asked the question, how many guys are you comfortable with putting on the field? He responded with six or seven names. quite a number. Are you just as comfortable with that, Chris?
I think I am. When I did my offensive roster breakdown on the Obligatory podcast, we talked about this. We talked about receiver depth. And, of course, everybody knows the top three guys in Chase Sowell and Brett Eskelson and Kobe Howard. But I really think there are a trio of guys behind them. And there were the three who were mentioned by Coach Mauser. So you've got Zay Robinson, who I think you and I both agree, Jim, is going to be a name to watch. Look for number two on offense starting with this Saturday, maybe also returning punts. Keith Jones, the Grambling transfer, and Amarian Jackson, the true freshman who's been the talk of camp. I think that's a legit two deep. And again, talking about mouths to feed, don't forget, we're going through a rotation of running backs. We've got a mobile quarterback who can make plays with his legs. We've got multiple tight ends who can hurt you down the field. If you are even close to going legit two deep at three receiver spots, that's better than most programs around the country can probably claim right now. So the extent to which that's legit or not will reveal itself over the next 5 to 6 weeks. But to even be in the situation where you can ask those questions and have that conversation, it's a great spot to be in modern college football. And absolutely, when you talk about that position group, Jim, a substantial upgrade from where we have been at Penn State for many long years now.
Oh yes, it's been a long hard ride with the wide receivers. So we've been talking quite a bit about the offense. On the defensive side of the ball now, again, mobile quarterback from Marshall, which we talked about. Who are the key players on defense to look for when you've got that kind of quarterback on the other side of the ball?
Well, we know philosophically there's going to be a shift on defense this year under Danton Lynn. It's been kind of talked to death that we went out in the transfer portal and completely reshaped the defensive tackle room. And so, you know, we've heard Tony Rojas talk about that a lot here in the lead up to kickoff, that what that bulk on the interior is there to do is clog up lanes and occupy blockers and free the linebackers up to make plays. So to me, Jim, the absolute key player in terms of the chess match with Del Rio Wilson, the quarterback for Marshall, is Tony Rojas. But another guy who I think can come in and be a key component of that is Marcus Neal, the transfer safety from Iowa State, number 31. Really more of like a box guy who can, you know, cover well enough to certainly not be a huge liability in the passing game, but where his strength is coming up and playing a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. And I would say if I had to draw an early player comp to him, and I know this will be close to your heart, Jim, this goes back a little ways now, unfortunately, for both of us, but it's James Boyd. I know you love, because he could hit like a truck. So I think, you know, the two names that come to the top of my head when you say who is going to be most responsible for Del Rio Wilson and keeping him in check, it's Marcus Neal and Tony Rojas.
That's a pretty good call with that. And just to go back to your talking about Marcus Neal, I'll circle back also to Jeremiah Cooper, who we talked about earlier. That's a great set of safeties.
Boy,
I'm
sure
not
is.
Sure people appreciate those that because they came from Iowa State, maybe not know those names. If I'm going to make my, you know, prediction for the season, my prediction is we're all going to fall in love with the safeties this year.
Man, I hope so. I love watching great safety play, and we've gotten quite a lot of it at Penn State in recent years. So those guys are stepping into a pretty rich legacy of talent recently at the position. So hey, I'm with you.
All right, we've got still a few minutes left. Let's go down the path of, I know you've made your predictions on scores. I want to hear your take on how you think this game will roll out. A first game for Matt Campbell in the big stadium. Might they stumble early? Do you think it's a fast start? Establish the run early? What style? What do you expect to see?
I do think there will be an effort to run the ball I wonder a little bit, is there going to be sensitivity to these wide receiver questions that we've been talking about? Where is there any evidence that early on Taylor Mauser feels the need to get the wideouts involved in the game? Because certainly he's been hearing all offseason about how that's been an issue, and then the infamous Orange Bowl stat of zero completions to the receivers and everything. I hope not. Honestly, I hope he tunes out all that outside noise and just calls the game the way he wants to call it. And if that means I think I've got the horses to run this ball 42 times a game and win it, go ahead and do it. That's okay with me. Just looking at the way this roster was put together, thinking about the particulars of our situation, and again, just going back to week zero and thinking about how early season college football looks now, where you have Frankenstein's monster roster every offseason, you get less practice time than you ever had. It's typically a little janky. I am expecting, Jim, for there to be some grumbling and some uncomfortable shifting in the seats in Beaver Stadium at points on Saturday, but I think we walk out of there feeling like it was a good start and a comfortable win. That said, I hope I'm wrong. I hope we just blow the doors off these guys.
Well, yeah, of course we all feel that way. I'm curious to see. I love this from Taylor Mauser, where he talks about Rocco Beck and his contribution to the game plan. And I'm sure a lot of offense coordinators do this. Hey, what plays do you like? What don't you like? But it seems like he puts a real emphasis on it. I'm going to be curious early on, even like first play from scrimmage, is it going to be, hey, Rocco, what do you want to do that first play? What do you want to establish? Do you want to throw that ball on first down, get that out of the way, feel healthy, you know, get a completion early, do that kind of thing? I just feel like those first couple plays, it's going to be, oh, that's what Rocco likes, more than it's going to be necessarily what Taylor Mauser wants to do, if you know what I mean by that.
And that's why familiarity between coach and player and with the system is such an advantage for this team this year.
Yes, and that, especially at the quarterback position. And remember, he's still got his weapons. He has his number one running back from a year ago, his top two tight ends from a year ago, his top two wide receivers from a year ago, his quarterback coach, and his offensive coordinator. So that's not so bad. Now, I know you put this out before, Chris. It's time for your prediction for the game.
Okay, I'm just sticking with 35-12. Randomly 35. Generated.
35-12 it is, and a bold prediction for the game.
Okay, so I am going to get even more specific with the bold prediction than I did when you asked me this question on the HVU Insider podcast, Jim. And that is that I think the comparison we've heard between Coby Howard and San Francisco 49ers Deebo Samuel is going to be on display from game number one. My bold prediction is that Coby Howard will score a rushing touchdown in this game against Marshall.
I absolutely love that prediction. I want to see, I am so anxious to see Coby Howard, Zay Robinson, want to see them returning punts, returning kicks, and getting their hands on the ball. Chris, that is it for our show. Thank you. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.